Imagine looking at your car's GPS,
Right.
right? The solid blue line is there on the screen. The little voice is telling you to just keep going straight.
But then you actually look out the windshield.
Exactly. You look out the windshield and the road is just, it's completely vanished. There's just an open field in front of you.
Right. The map no longer matches reality.
Yeah. And honestly, that is exactly what consuming global news and, trying to analyze modern institutions feels like right now for so many people.
It really does.
The shared definition of truth isn't just a little murky. For a lot of people, the map has just completely stopped matching the territory they're standing on.
Well, I mean, it is the absolute definition of narrative volatility. We are dealing with this unprecedented information overload.
Right.
And those old compasses we used to rely on, like the traditional ways we established facts and societal consensus, they are severely glitching right now. People are waking up to the fact that navigating this landscape, it requires an entirely new set of tools.
Which is exactly why today's deep dive is geared specifically toward you, the listener, who is, actively trying to navigate all of this chaos. Today, we are analyzing the Truth Seekers Weekly Briefing, specifically the Alternative News Review for July 17th, which is published on behalf of the Great Awakening Report.
Right, and our mission here today is very deliberate.
Yeah, in a world of like engineered distraction
Yeah.
and this constant endless media churn, our objective isn't to just swap out one official narrative for a new, equally rigid alternative
You
narrative.
know, Rahav.
Instead, we want to look past the daily headlines. We want to analyze the underlying signals, the recurring threads, and really those broader patterns that are emerging across independent research right now.
And, as we unpack this briefing, it's pretty critical to establish our baseline right up front.
Absolutely.
We are going to explore a really wide spectrum of ideas today. I mean, ranging from established scientific evidence about human biology to some highly contested hypotheses regarding ancient history.
Yeah, we're covering a lot of ground.
We are. And our role here is to impartially map these conversations. We aren't here to endorse specific claims or, take political
Right,
sides.
we're just the messengers here.
Exactly. The goal is to encourage your independent thinking, your personal sovereignty, and really your discernment. We want to understand what people are searching for in these alternative spaces and critically look at the mechanics of why they are searching for it in the first place.
So let's start with the loudest signal in this entire briefing. It really acts as the foundation for everything else we're going to talk about.
The trust crisis.
Yeah, the total systemic erosion of confidence in major institutions. And it's not just, a rejection of one specific government policy or being mad at one media
No,
outlet.
it's much deeper than that.
It is. It's a fundamental shift in how people view authority across the board, public health, finance, corporate governance, all of it.
Right, and the briefing categorizes this trust as social infrastructure, which is a really interesting way to phrase it.
Yeah, I love that term.
Because we normally think of infrastructure in strictly physical terms, right? Like bridges, highways, power
The
lines.
stuff we can see.
Exactly. But trust is this invisible scaffolding that actually allows a complex society to function efficiently. And when that scaffolding weakens, the friction in the entire system becomes immense.
It grinds to a halt.
Right. Think about public health initiatives or economic policies. If the baseline assumption of the public is no longer, well, this institution is acting in my best interest.
Then even basic governance just completely stalls out.
Yes. Policy implementation becomes nearly impossible because suddenly the public demands verification at every single step of the process.
Well, let's look at how that actually plays out mechanically, because it's not that people have suddenly just become entirely incapable of trust.
No, they've just changed the rules.
Yeah, they've completely changed the requirements for earning it. Think of it like a local bank.
Okay, I like this analogy.
Right, so 50 years ago, people trusted a bank simply because it had these massive marble columns out front and some official-sounding name etched into the stone on the facade.
The architecture of authority?
Yes, you saw the architecture of authority, so you just walked in and handed over your money. No questions asked.
Right.
But today, thanks to digital access and this just relentless news cycle of institutional failures, it's as if everyone is standing in the bank lobby demanding to physically look inside the vault.
They want to see the money.
They want to personally audit the ledgers before they deposit a single dime. those marble columns outside. They don't mean anything to anyone anymore.
That is a highly accurate representation of what sociologists actually call the transition from automatic trust to conditional trust.
Automatic to conditional, right.
Yeah. So automatic trust relied entirely on credentials, like a title, a PhD, a badge, a press podium.
The uniform, basically.
The uniform.
Yeah.
But conditional trust demands open records. It demands verifiable raw data and, most importantly, consistent performance.
The receipts.
Yes, the receipts. The public is essentially saying, show me the underlying data models, show me the unredacted emails, and I will just run the analysis myself.
But honestly, isn't that inherently exhausting for the average person?
Oh, it's incredibly exhausting.
I mean, think about your own media consumption just this past week. How much cognitive load are you taking on just to verify the basic facts of a single headline?
It's overwhelming.
We're all essentially being forced to act as independent investigative journalists just to, like, survive the daily news cycle.
It is incredibly taxing on the individual, yeah. And when millions of people adopt this defensive posture, demanding to see the receipts for every modern event, that skepticism, it inevitably bleeds backward.
How do you mean?
Well, if you believe modern institutions are obfuscating the truth about last week's geopolitical crisis or manipulating recent economic data.
The slope gets slippery.
Right. The logical next step for a lot of people is to question why you should trust the established textbooks to tell you the truth about what happened 300 or even 3,000 years ago.
Wow. So if the modern ledger is completely compromised in their eyes, people start actively auditing the historical ledger.
Exactly.
Which brings us perfectly to this massive surge in alternative historical research that the briefing highlights. We're seeing this deep, almost obsessive fascination with lost civilizations, unexplained archaeological discoveries, and, you know, advanced ancient engineering.
Yeah, and a prominent example driving a lot of this alternative research right now is the concept of Tartaria.
Okay, yes. I see this constantly on social media, popping up in my feeds. But let's actually explain the mechanics of what this theory claims, just for anyone listening who hasn't gone down that specific rabbit hole yet.
Sure. So the Tartaria hypothesis essentially proposes that a highly advanced global empire existed relatively recently.
Like how recently?
Proponents usually say up to the mid-19th century, and they claim it was deliberately erased from the historical record.
Just wiped out.
Yeah. They point to grandiose neoclassical architecture found in cities literally all over the world, from New York to Melbourne. And they argue that these massive, intricate stone structures couldn't possibly have been built by early settlers who just had horse-drawn wagons and rudimentary tools.
So where did the buildings come from then?
Well, the theory suggests these buildings were inherited, that they were left over from this lost Tartarian civilization, which was wiped out by some cataclysmic event.
The mud flood.
Exactly. It's often referred to in these circles as a mud flood.
Okay, I have to jump in and push back hard on this one.
Go for it.
Because mainstream historians, archaeologists, and architects completely categorically reject the Tartaria theory.
Oh, absolutely they do.
I mean, we have the construction records, we have the actual photographs of the excavations, the architectural blueprints, and literally the supply chain receipts for building these places.
Right, the paper trail is there.
It is.
Yeah.
So are we really supposed to view this as a genuine historical inquiry? To me, it feels more like people are projecting their intense anxieties about our current super fragile society onto the blank spaces of the past.
That's a really good observation.
Like, we feel incredibly unstable right now, so we're obsessed with fabricating this narrative about how a supposedly superior global empire could just mysteriously vanish overnight.
You are hitting on the core psychological tension here perfectly.
Yeah.
Mainstream academia absolutely dismisses the Tartaria theory as an internet-born fabrication.
Right.
However, if we look past that specific theory for a second, the broader pattern of questioning inherited history, that is actually being fueled by very real scientific advancement.
Wait, really? Like what?
Well, independent researchers are watching mainstream archaeology actively rewrite historical timelines using new tools.
Oh, like the new scanning tech.
Exactly. For example, LIDAR technology, which uses lasers fired from aircraft to penetrate dense jungle canopies.
Yeah, I've seen articles about that.
It is genuinely uncovering massive, previously totally unknown city structures in the Amazon basin. And ground-penetrating radar, along with advanced DNA analysis, they are constantly shifting our understanding of human migration and capability.
Okay, so the scientific tools are real and the discoveries are actually real. But in the alternative space, the interpretations of that data are frequently going rogue.
Yes, that's exactly it. The underlying takeaway from the briefing isn't that one specific alternative historical theory is correct.
It's the realization that history itself isn't settled.
Right. It's the realization that history is not just the static list of settled dates. It is an actively evolving narrative.
Yeah.
And the fascination with all of this stems from a very practical modern fear. If ancient civilizations possessed far greater sophistication than we previously thought.
Whether that's megalithic architecture or complex water systems.
Or precise astronomical alignments, yeah. If they had all that and they still collapsed, that serves as a deeply uncomfortable mirror for us today.
It really forces the question, right? Like,
yeah.
If they could fall with all their advancement, why are we so arrogant to assume we won't? Which transitions us perfectly into the vulnerability of our own modern civilization. Because the briefing spends significant time analyzing critical infrastructure and our rapidly shrinking margin for error.
It's a huge theme right now.
We've built this incredibly complex, interconnected world, but lately it really feels like it's made of glass.
Well, over the last half century, modern society has relentlessly prioritized maximum efficiency over redundancy.
Yes.
We have built systems that are so tightly coupled that a disruption in one single node ripples globally within hours.
Let's trace the mechanics of how that fragility actually operates.
Yeah.
Because people hear the cloud and they conceptualize it as this ethereal, invisible network just floating above us.
Right, like magic.
But cloud computing relies on massive, extremely physical data centers. And those centers require monumental amounts of electricity to run and millions of gallons of water just to cool the servers down.
Right. So if a regional power grid in, say, Virginia goes down because of extreme weather.
Or a targeted cyber attack.
Exactly. The servers overheat and they have to shut down automatically to prevent literal physical fires.
Wow.
And when those servers go offline, maybe a major payment processing gateway or a critical logistics database just stops functioning.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Suddenly, a cargo ship sitting at a geographical choke point, like the Strait of Hormuz, cannot process the digital customs payment it needs to actually dock.
So it just sits there.
It just sits idle on the water. Millions of dollars of goods, including medical supplies and critical manufacturing components, delayed.
That's crazy to think about.
A localized power failure in one country instantly stalls physical supply chains on the complete other side of the planet. The incredible efficiency of the digital cloud is exactly what makes the physical world so terrifyingly fragile.
We've literally optimized ourselves into a corner.
We really have.
It's like we've turned modern civilization into a high-performance Formula One race car.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Think about how a Formula One car operates, right? It is this absolute marvel of aerodynamic engineering. It's breathtakingly fast.
Okay.
And on a perfectly paved, totally predictable track, it is the most efficient machine on Earth.
Right. Flawless conditions.
But if it hits a single pothole, or if the track temperature drops by just 10 degrees, the suspension shatters, the tires completely lose grip, and the race is over.
It has absolutely zero margin for error.
Zero. What we actually need right now as a society isn't a faster race car. We need an off-road vehicle.
Yes.
I mean, it might be slower, it might not be aerodynamically perfect, but it's built with heavy shocks to absorb unexpected impacts.
That structural shift moving from the Formula One car to the off-road vehicle is the defining challenge identified in this research.
It's a total paradigm shift.
Because systems designed purely for efficiency, they deliberately strip out excess capacity.
Because excess capacity is expensive.
Exactly. It hurts the bottom line.
Okay.
But resilience actually requires excess capacity. It requires backup systems, localized supply chains, and decentralized energy production.
Just think about what it takes for you, the listener, to simply listen to this audio right now.
Oh, the logistics are staggering.
The undersea fiber optic cables, the satellite routing, the cellular towers, the rare earth minerals mined for the battery of your device.
Right.
Think about how many invisible physical and digital networks have to function with absolute perfection for this simple act to happen. It is truly staggering when you realize how dependent we are on that perfection.
And, you know, once people recognize that the external grid is that fragile and lacks redundancy, it drives a parallel realization about their internal grid.
Their bodies.
Yes. If you cannot rely on the external world to be stable, you must ensure your physical body is an off-road vehicle.
Oh, I love how that connects.
This brings us to the massive shift toward reclaiming biological agency that the briefing highlights.
We are definitely seeing a hard pivot away from passive disease management.
Huge pivot.
Because the traditional medical model is totally reactive. You know, you wait until a symptom appears, you go to a clinic, and you receive some sort of chemical intervention to suppress that one specific symptom.
Putting a band-aid on it.
Right. But the new model emerging across these alternative health communities, it's proactive human optimization. It focuses entirely on foundational cellular health.
The briefing specifically points to areas like metabolic health, mitochondrial function, peptides, and circadian biology.
Right.
And to understand why this is such a revolution, we have to look at the how. Take mitochondrial function, for example.
Let's break that down.
Mitochondria are essentially the microscopic power plants inside your cells. They generate the ATP.
Which is what exactly?
ATP is the actual chemical energy required for literally every biological process in your body.
Okay, so it's the fuel.
Exactly. And when they become dysfunctional, which is often due to highly processed diets, chronic stress, or just a severe lack of natural sunlight, your systemic energy drops.
And that's when things go wrong.
Right, you become vulnerable to a whole host of chronic diseases. So instead of just treating the downstream disease once it appears, the focus here is on repairing the actual power plant.
And the incredible part of this whole movement is that technology is democratizing the ability to actually do this.
That is exactly the point. We now have continuous glucose monitors. We have these advanced wearable fitness trackers that measure heart rate variability.
Direct-to-consumer lab testing.
Yes. Historically, you had to be enrolled in some million-dollar clinical trial to get minute-by-minute data on how your body actually responds to a specific food or a poor night's sleep.
Yeah, that data was locked away.
But now you can literally just look at an app on your phone and see exactly how a spike in your blood sugar at lunch correlates with a total crash in your cognitive focus 2 hours later.
So the dynamic is shifting away from a doctor just dictating your health protocols to you essentially becoming the CEO of your own biology.
That's a great way to put it.
You are treating your daily lifestyle choices, like your exposure to morning sunlight, your fasting windows, your movement, not just as generic wellness habits, but as core biological inputs.
You are adjusting the dials in real time based on your own unique data.
You are building internal resilience before illness ever has a chance to take root. You are really taking back agency.
Nah.
But, and here's where I see a major bottleneck in this whole optimization thing.
Okay, what is it?
Well, being the CEO of your biology implies that you actually have the mental clarity to run the company. You can track your glucose all day long, you can optimize your mitochondria, and you can take all the peptides you want. But if your nervous system is completely fried from like doom-scrolling alternative news and constantly stressing over the fragile power grid,
You're gonna hit a wall.
you are going to hit a biological feeling. You simply cannot out-supplement a nervous system that is chronically stuck in a fight-or-flight state.
Which brings us directly to the final frontier analyzed in this briefing, the consciousness revolution.
The inner game.
Yes. There is this growing realization that physical optimization is entirely incomplete without mental and emotional regulation.
Right.
Practices that were once categorized purely as, you know, esoteric spirituality or philosophy, things like meditation, breath work, altered states of awareness.
The stuff people used to just brush off.
Exactly. That stuff is now undergoing rigorous clinical scientific investigation at major research institutions.
So why this sudden mainstream scientific interest in the inner world? Like, what changed?
Because the sheer pressure of modern life is actively breaking us.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Our evolutionary biology is simply not equipped to process the sheer volume of information, outrage, and constant crisis that we are exposed to through digital media on a daily
They're
basis.
taking in too much.
Way too much. The human nervous system is literally buckling under the load of that narrative volatility we discussed at the start of this deep dive.
Right.
Consequently, practices that regulate the nervous system are no longer seen as just, you know, relaxing hobbies. They are now essential survival skills.
Let's explain the actual mechanics of that regulation, though. Like, what actually happens in the physical brain when we engage in these practices?
It really all comes down to neuroplasticity.
Which is the brain's ability to rewire itself.
Exactly. The brain's ability to physically reorganize itself by forming new neural connections. When you engage in consistent mindfulness or breath work or nervous system regulation, you are actively shifting your body out of the sympathetic state.
That's your fight or flight stress response.
Right. And you are moving it into the parasympathetic state, which is the rest and digest mode.
Okay.
And over time, doing this consistently, you physically alter the structure of your brain. You strengthen the prefrontal cortex, which is the part that governs executive function, logical decision making, and emotional regulation.
So you get better at handling stress.
Yes. And simultaneously, you actually shrink the amygdala.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the amygdala is that primitive part of the brain that processes fear and threat detection. So you are literally upgrading your internal hardware to handle higher levels of complexity without burning out.
It's a really striking paradox when you step back and look at it all.
How so?
Well, we are pouring billions and billions of dollars into developing artificial intelligence, right? Essentially creating this massive synthetic external brain to process the entire world for us.
Yeah, that's true.
And yet, the corresponding counter movement is humanity desperately trying to unlock our own inner technology. We are racing to understand our own self-awareness, our empathy, our intuition, and our consciousness just to keep up with the insane world we've built.
It is a profound paradox. And, you know, if we look at the entire board of what we've discussed today.
Oh, briefing.
Yeah. The public demanding to see the raw ledgers of our institutions, the reexamination of historical timelines, the push to build resilient physical infrastructure, the biological agency movement, and the scientific exploration of consciousness.
All of it.
There is a single unifying pattern connecting every single one of them.
It all comes down to the pursuit of sovereignty.
Exactly. It is a global, decentralized movement away from external dependence and toward internal resilience.
People are just waking up.
They are recognizing that they can no longer outsource their critical thinking, their physical health, or their psychological stability to these large institutions or established systems.
Responsibility has fully returned to the individual.
It has.
And I mean, it is an incredibly empowering shift, but let's be honest, it is also a really heavy burden to carry.
Oh, absolutely.
If you are the CEO of your reality, the buck stops entirely with you. There's no one else to blame.
That's the trade-off for sovereignty.
The briefing actually concludes with a reflection that I think captures the exact mindset required to navigate this shift successfully.
Mm-hmm.
It notes, and I'm quoting here, "Curiosity without discernment becomes distraction. Skepticism without humility becomes cynicism. Wisdom lives in the balance between the two."
Wow. That balance is really the key to everything.
It really is.
Because seeking truth and building sovereignty isn't about just blindly rejecting everything the mainstream says.
Right. That's just being contrarian.
Exactly. Nor is it about blindly accepting every alternative theory you find on the internet. It is about remaining grounded and open-minded. You have to continuously sharpen your discernment so you can identify the genuine signals amidst a deafening amount of noise.
You have to be willing to refine your understanding as new data comes in.
Absolutely.
But before we wrap up today, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final, somewhat provocative thought to mull over, something that builds on everything we've discussed today.
Okay, let's hear it.
If our systems continue to decentralize and everyone focuses entirely on personal sovereignty, biological agency, and individual resilience, how do we avoid fracturing into millions of isolated islands?
That's a huge question.
Right. In an era where everyone is fiercely independent and building their own rugged off-road vehicles, how will we redefine community and shared responsibility? If you are the CEO of your own reality, how do we build the bridges between us to ensure we are still traveling the same direction?
That is perhaps the most vital question of the next decade.
I think so too.
Because sovereignty gives you the strength to stand alone, but true resilience, the kind that survives the actual collapse of infrastructure or the massive shifting of historical narratives, that has always required a connected community.
Something to really chew on as you navigate the week ahead. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep observing the patterns. Keep cultivating that critical balance between skepticism and humility. And never stop asking better questions.
Well said.
Because even when the GPS map is glitching and the roads don't look anything like you expected, you still have the ability to steer the car.